Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the January 24th broadcast of Italian Tomatoes.
I got steam heat, I got steam heat, I got steam heat, but I need your love to keep away the cold. I got steam heat, I got steam heat, I got steam heat, but I can't get warm without your hand to hold. The radiator's hissing, still I need your kissing to keep me from freezing each night. I got a hot water bottle, but nothing I got'll take the place of you holding me tight. I got steam heat, I got steam heat, I got steam heat, but I need your love to keep away the cold. They told me to shovel more coal.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the January 24th broadcast of Italian Tomatoes. I'm your host, Bob Curie, and I thought I'd open the show with a recognition of the weather that is hitting the east coast of the U.S. Record snowfalls on the east coast. I've been getting emails from my brother on Long Island, and I think they got close to 2 feet, so he's kind of snowed in, as are many people in New York, and we hope that they all get through the bad weather in one piece. And just a reminder that despite whatever is going on in the political world, nature is always out there, needs to be contended with. The subject of today's show is to Trump and Trump not, obviously. That kind of gives a clue as to what the subject matter is about. It's about the rise of Donald Trump and the I think belated recognition by the opinion elites that this guy has almost all but sewn up the Republican nomination. I mean, he does have a potential opponent in Cruz, Ted Cruz. There could be a situation in which some last-minute disaster committed by Trump, a gaffe or some whatever, could come out of nowhere to derail his candidacy. But with pushing 40% in the polls, with unlimited money, and really no dents in his momentum, I think there is a very good possibility that he's going to go all the way and get the nomination and has a very good chance, I think, of winning the election. Although, of course, the election is far off and anything can happen between now and November, especially in the composition of the Democratic ticket, because there's a big question mark as to whether Hillary's legal troubles will sink her in the end. I think Richard Disney is in the chat and wanted to say hello to him from Free Fire Friday, another radio show that deals with Second Amendment and firearms and related topics, which is on Friday night at 9 o'clock Eastern Time. Although I don't know if I should quote Eastern Time for a gun-related show. I don't know if the governor of New York actually lets the people of the state look or listen to gun-related shows, but I tend to quote all my times by reference to Eastern, and then people can do their own calculations as to when the show comes on in their local time zone. Before we get into the political discussion, I did want to make a few notes on the market. Rough couple of weeks in January in the financial markets. We've seen a collapse in oil prices and a lot of stock volatility with prices trending down. Stocks have been hit by pessimism about banks, about the plunge in oil prices, about the health of financial institutions that lend to energy companies. There is concern about rising interest rates. There is concern about slowdown, economic slowdown in China. Of course, the slowdown in economic activity in China is a perennial. It's been affecting the markets for several years, and they react downwards, and then they bounce back. But I think at some point the reality of that China is unreliable as an economic growth engine is going to really sink in for good. And what happens to equities then, who only knows. But although there was a stock market rally in the last couple of days of this past week, stocks are down 5% year-to-date, roughly. Crude oil has dropped 50% over the past 12 months. It closed, West Texas Intermediate closed at $32. On Friday, it had been, a year ago, it was pushing around 60. There are major layoffs occurring all over the energy industry, and it's important to note that the energy industry was a haven for people looking for work during the stagnant economy of Obama's first term. So as it contracts, the challenge is going to be to find a source of employment to compensate for all those lost jobs. And this economy is not good at creating new jobs. So we'll have to see how that all works. But on to the political discussion. I think there's, like I said at the outset, there is a belated recognition that the Republican presidential field is narrowing very rapidly. And I think there a lot of the elite opinion makers within the Republican Party and the conservative media are in denial about the reality of the kind of political game on the ground, which is that the establishment has already lost. It's going to have to hold its nose and either settle for Trump, which it does not like and really cannot stand for reasons both political and stylistic and cultural, or it's really going to have to hold its nose and support Cruz is really the only credible alternative to Trump. And so you can understand the convulsions that the conservative opinion makers who have close ties to the established media are having as they contemplate this series of events, because they had all assumed that one of the establishment candidates, you know, a Jeb Bush, a Scott Walker, a Chris Christie, a Marco Rubio, whatever, would catch on, that Cruz would didn't have a big enough power base to really go anywhere, and that Trump would implode. And those expectations really did not materialize. As to the speed with which everything is going to happen, I think the best person to explain that is Dick Morris, political guru Dick Morris, who I follow religiously in his Lunch Alert podcasts. So he has an explanation as to how the dynamics of the race are going to work out in terms of the narrowing of the candidate pool that is going to take place in January and February and March. So this is a two-minute clip by him, and I think it's very instructive.
How will the Republican field narrow down? A lot of people are wondering, when will Bush drop out or when will Rubio drop out? The fact of the matter is that the rules of the game require that this become a two-way field by March 1st. Most people don't understand it. Most candidates don't get it. But let me explain why. On March 1st, there are a huge number of delegates selected, about 700 of the 2,000 that go to the convention. And they're all selected by proportional representation. You get the same proportion of the delegates at stake as you got of the vote share. But most states have a threshold. where they say you can't participate in splitting up the delegates unless you win 20% or 15% of the vote. So you could win 10%, but you don't get a tenth of the delegates. You get zero. And only the people who got more than 20% share in the allocation of the delegates. So, for example, take Texas, the biggest state, 150 delegates. Now, you need 20% of the vote in Texas to share in the delegates. So if Trump gets 35 and Cruz gets 35 and the rest get 10 or less, Trump and Cruz split up the delegates. The others play no part in it. And by the time you get to the states that have no threshold and really permit proportional representation without a minimum requirement, so many delegates will be selected based on the thresholds that it will in fact be a two-way race. Now, Bush and Rubio probably stay on until Florida because that's a winner-take-all state, and they hope that that gives them a second life on their candidacies. But after that, they'll be out. So this will become a Trump versus Cruz race very, very quickly. Thanks for watching. Now, if you want more details on this, including delegate numbers and everything else, watch my podcast. It's at the end of this video. Just click on the link. Or go to dickmorris.com or go to podcast1.com.
Okay, well, that was Dick Morris on the mechanics of the delegate selection and why, given the way that the rules are in the various states as far as awarding delegates, how this race is really going to concentrate down to just a couple of candidates. And those two candidates are the two that the Republican establishment and the elite conservative media do not like. Although some of the elite conservative media does like Cruz, a lot of them don't. And you know, there are all sorts of divisions in the conservative media establishment, if you will. The Republican political establishment, the donor class, can't stand either Cruz or Trump, and the fact that those two are going to be, one of those two is going to be the likely nominee, is causing all sorts of convulsions, and we will see the fallout from that going forward. So the question I wanted to explore in this show is, well, how did this all happen? I mean, how did we go from a year ago where the conventional wisdom was that a Jeb Bush or a Scott Walker or maybe a Marco Rubio, all of whom have great appeal to the establishment wing of the conservative party with some overlap in the conservative wing, how did they go from being, you know, very promising contenders to being kind of also-rans? And just what is driving the dynamics of this race? So I think that in order to answer that question, you have to go beyond the conservative movement, beyond the conservative media, beyond the Republican establishment, and just look at the country as a whole. Now, it was interesting this week that National Review, you know, a venerable flagship conservative publication founded by William F. Buckley, who he died several years ago, that its editorial staff found itself so opposed to the rise of Trump that it put together a whole issue devoted to debunking Trump's conservative credentials and basically saying that, you know, he shouldn't be supported. And some of the NRO people are Cruz supporters. Others are all over the map in terms of the candidates they support. But NRO is just another example of the cluelessness of both the Republican political establishment and the conservative media establishment, because events really have passed them by. And they find themselves in a situation where elite opinion journals are having absolutely no impact on the outcome. So, again, how did this all happen? Well, one thing I think you have to really take into account is a lot of people are becoming politically engaged who have not been politically engaged during the past few presidential election cycles. And because of that, crossover votes are going to play a much bigger role in this election for both Trump and Cruz, but especially Trump. With Cruz, I think some of the evangelicals and values voters who really were turned off by both McCain and Romney are coming back to political activism, and they're going to power that candidacy. And for Trump, a lot of the middle class who didn't vote in 2008 and 2012, who are not very ideological, who are not movement conservatives, who were turned off by McCain and even more turned off by Romney because Romney was perceived to be a elite wheeler dealer with restructuring companies and laying people off and all that stuff. Well, Trump does not emit those kinds of vibes, and he's really starting to pull people back into the political process. And then you have the situation where African Americans, who obviously went for Barack Obama in a big way, are now looking at the eighth year of his presidency, and they see a terrible deterioration in their economic prospects, especially for their young people. And they are starting to shop beyond the Democratic Party, which, of course, freaks the Democratic Party out. And this is all neatly summarized by the emergence of the famous YouTube personalities, Diamond and Silk, who have been pushing a lot of pro-Trump messages targeted at the African-American community and who have been publicizing a website called ditchandswitch.com, which is basically encouraging people who have been voting Democratic or not voting at all to register Republican and vote for Donald Trump. So I'm going to play one of their videos, and here we go.
Turn on the
okay,
staff.
With all of the media trickery and the media biases that's going on, we decided to start a new movement called the Ditch and Switch. So what we're doing is we're ditching the media biasness, the media trickery. Mm-hmm. We want you to ditch that Democrat plantation and ditch all of the Democrats, okay? And we want you to switch your party to Republican so that we can vote for Donald Trump in the primaries, want you to do it now. Mm-hmm. So if you go to the website www.ditchandswitchnow.com, everything will be laid out how you need to switch your party in your state, okay?
Exactly.
All right? Okay. And we want to see you doing this
We
want to see pictures, or you can upload videos.
Yes.
And you can send that to ditchandswitchnow@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. You upload it there, and then make sure you put a little note in there that says you have permission to use my videos or my pictures, okay?
That's right.
All right? And you may be featured in one of our next show or even on our website,
that's
okay?
Right.
All right. So the name of the new movement is called the Ditch and Switch. What you're doing is ditching Democrats, and you're going to switch your party to Republicans so that we can vote for Donald Trump in the primaries. And listen, we wouldn't talk about none of this here, but since the media and all of the pundits and the establishment and everybody want to start a movement on Donald Trump.
That's right.
Look like the silent majority is about to start a movement on them, okay?
Okay.
DitchandSwitchNow.com.
Okay. Well, you know, one of the things about politics that we should not overlook is politics can be fun. I mean, if you don't I wouldn't say not take it seriously, but don't be too self-absorbed in one's reaction to what is going on. And these ladies know what they want, and they have emerged as YouTube stars with their YouTube channel, The Viewer's View, in promoting this theme of, okay, African Americans have been voting for the Democratic Party for many, many decades now, and the disappointments of Barack Obama have really brought things to a head, and it's time to get competition in the political arena, and Donald Trump represents competition against the status quo. They are very effective in their messaging, and I think they are responding to a recognition by the African American community that the system is simply not working for them, as it is not working for many other Americans. And that really leads us to what has been changing in the Democratic Party. Now, in my in the show, the podcast version of this show, I have a number of photos from the old era of the Democratic Party that are going to display as you listen to the podcast on the computer. And important to remind people that the Democratic Party has really changed in the past 60 years. And sort of kind of to drive that home, I'm going to play two clips. One music clip is from a World War II movie, a post-World War II movie, The Best Years of Our Lives. And it kind of, to me, evokes the era when the Democratic Party really represented the working and the middle class. They had to find a way to get America to cope with the Depression and then World War II. And they were really quite successful, by and large, in doing that, and thus secured the voting habits of Americans for a couple of generations. So let's play that theme song. That movie, the theme from that movie played, again, that movie is taking place right after World War II, and it follows the adjustment of a number of veterans to civilian life. And the opening scene where that theme is played is in an air terminal, and it actually mentions an American Airlines flight, which, being an American Airlines alumnus, I had to get that in there. Well, anyway, I mean, this is a reminder of a different era in our country's history when the Democratic Party then was nationalist, populist. It was a coalition that eased the Northeast white Anglo-Saxon Protestant establishment, which was Republican and very tied to Wall Street. It eased that elite out of power. And it led the country through the Depression, through World War II, established the foundations of the post-war prosperity, and use the power of the government to protect the middle class. And a lot of the programs today that are just second nature to us are rooted in that era, from, you know, Social Security to the GI Bill, to, I mean, so many things. The Democratic Party, justly, I think, was perceived as really watching out for the interests of the middle class. But, of course, it's been in power now on and off for, you know, kind of in the ascendant for many, many decades. And like everything, power starts to make you decadent and corrupt. So to symbolize where the Democratic Party is now, I'm going to play another clip in honor of our Chicago, the Chicago origins of our president, current president. I thought I would play a little clip from the movie Chicago.
Ask any of the chickies in my pen. They'll tell you I'm the biggest mother hen. I love them all and all of them love me, because the system works, the system called reciprocity.
On your face.
Welcome, ladies. Got a little motto, always see me through. When you're good to mama, mama's good to you.
You might think I'm here to make your life a living hell. It's just not true.
There's a lot of favors I'm prepared to do. You do one for mama, she'll do one for you.
I'd like to be your friend if you let me. So if there's something that upsets you or makes you unhappy in any way, don't shoot your fat ass mouth off to me, because I don't give a shit. Now move it out.
They say the life is fit for cats, and that's the way I live. So I deserve a lot of tax for what I've got to give. Don't you know that this hand washes that one too? When you're good to mama,
that, I think, is a very good symbol for the current state of the Democratic Party. Just like the Republican Party in its heyday was dominated by the Northeast Wall Street-based elite, the Democratic Party today is dominated by a Northeast liberal elite, you know, added to that the West Coast and Silicon Valley and Hollywood. It's internationalist, globalist, in love with Wall Street. I mean, this is one of the great ironies that, you know, for many, many decades, the Democratic Party ran against the banks and Wall Street and the big industrialists and all that. And that just went out the window with the system of crony capitalism we have now that is embraced by most of the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party elites push multiculturalism and immigration, both of which target the interests of the middle class. The crony capitalist model of business means that you have a bazaar of special interests trading favors, seeking rents through taxes and regulations that damage the middle class and entrench cartels that the elite members of both the Democratic and Republican parties belong to. And unfortunately, a huge portion of the Republican Party has gone along with that arrangement. So what you have is a huge number of people are disaffected who either traditionally were independents or who voted Democrat, who are absolutely fed up with the political establishment, and they are really looking, energetically looking for an alternative. So, and what you're seeing is a surge in American nationalism, which is non-ideological and thus not very conservative, but very recognizably American. These people are sick of global capitalism, foreign adventurism, and wars. They're sick of global elites, mass immigration, genteel ethnic cleansing, which is being carried out by flooding whole areas of the country with immigrants. They are tired of the hollowing out of the economic base. They want a non-consensus politician who can crack heads and get things done. And this, I think, is the big advantage that Trump has over Cruz, because Cruz has a lot of intellectual firepower. He's a very bright guy, but his ideological conservatism is not really does not match the mood of the American public. They don't so much want a reduction in government. They want it to act more in accord with their wishes. And they want a doer to negotiate for their interests in the running of the government, not to, you know, basically drastically shrink the government and leave the middle class in the lurch, which has grown increasingly dependent on government programs. A lot of the conservatives who are bashing Trump and supporting Cruz are forgetting the political disaster that Cruz engineered with the shutdown of the government in the fall of 2013. I mean, the Republican Party really took a lot of hits in the opinion polls during that period, but they were able to recover in time for the 2014 election because of the absolute roiling disaster that Obamacare was, plus the continuing stagnation of the economy and the Ebola crisis, and then the continuing fallout over all of the Obama scandals, including Benghazi. So by the time that the November 2014 election rolled around, the Republicans had recovered and were able to do very well in that election. But the kind of Cruz model of political governance has not been very effective. And I personally and many other people have, as much as we like Ted Cruz and appreciate the necessity of his role in shaking things up in the Senate, really have a lot of reservations about putting him into the top job. So that's the situation that we have. Now, in the Republican Party and the conservative media, which tries to mediate the political process for conservatives but interacts with the Republican political establishment, all of those people are living in the bubble, D.C., New York, Los Angeles. They sell media and consulting services to Republican politicians who are perceived to have sold out to the new order. And because they are so closely tied into that bubble, they are clueless in understanding and responding to and anticipating the direction of political change that is being driven by the revolt of the middle classes. So, you know, my view is politically, we're kind of in the Wild West right now, in which the established patterns of political interaction are breaking down, and we really are rolling the dice. At least the Republican Party is rolling the dice, or is about to roll the dice, on Donald Trump, who is a wild card. We don't really know how this is all going to play out. And I think a lot of the movement conservatives are looking at Donald Trump and they question his ideological bona fides and are very nervous about him. And I think, you know, they probably are right to be somewhat nervous about him. But this whole situation has arisen because of the breakdown in confidence on the part of both the Republican establishment and the conservative media in asserting a credible alternative. So that's kind of the end of my prepared remarks. If I'm going to keep the show going for a minute or so, if anybody wants to call in, and but if they don't, if they're all snowed in, and many of my colleagues on the private lists are very definite Cruz supporters and may not be all that receptive to the content of this broadcast, so they may hold their peace for the time being, which I totally understand. We really are in uncharted waters right now, and how it's all going to shake out, I don't know. I mean, if you had told me a year ago that Trump would be where he is today, I mean, I would have been just absolutely astonished. I really thought he was not serious in all of his talk about running. Then when he did run, I thought that, oh, well, it's, you know, more for publicity for his apprentice show and his just general desire to be in the media spotlight. And then when he started taking some of the controversial positions that he was taking, I thought, well, you know, maybe there's something here that I didn't recognize. But he could still implode because he's a business mogul, and business moguls are used to getting their way, and they don't really do well in the cut and thrust of political discourse, just like Ross Perot kind of blew up 20 years ago. But the guy just keeps going. So we are where we are. And I really think, looking at the tea leaves right now, that he's going to be the Republican nominee. I mean, anything can happen. Politics is very unpredictable. But I really think that he is kind of going to do it. So that is just an astonishing thing, and it's such a commentary that such an unconventional candidate has emerged, one in which about whom there are legitimate question marks. The fact of that emergence is an absolute judgment on the conduct of the establishment of the Republican Party and the conservative media, which purports to explain Republican principles to the broader American populace. And that is the situation we've got now. So I don't see anybody else having called in. I want to thank Richard for dropping into the chat. And again, I want to mention that Richard and Johnny Kempen have their Second Amendment and firearms-related show on every Friday night at 9 o'clock Eastern Time called Free Fire Friday. Very fun listen. Do drop in and try it out. I think you will enjoy it. And on that note, I think I'm going to close out the show. And once again, I'm going to play my opening theme to commiserate with all the people on the East Coast who are buried under the snow. Please be careful. Don't overexert yourself shoveling your driveway. Be careful on the road. Be careful about going back to work. Just drive safely, drive prudently, and just be safe. And we'll be back in a few weeks with another podcast. Have a wonderful Sunday and a very nice week coming up. Have a great day.
I got steam heat. I got steam heat. I got steam heat, but I need your love to keep away the cold. I got steam heat. I got steam heat. I got steam heat, but I can't get warm without your hand to hold. The radiator's hissing, still I need your kissing to keep me from freezing each night. stage. I got a hot water bottle, but nothing I got'll take the place of you. Holding me tight, I got steam heat, I got steam heat, I got steam heat, but I need your love to keep away the cold. They told me to shovel more coal in the boiler. They told me to shovel more coal in the boiler. They told me to shovel more coal.